Simon looks at the reemergence of pirate radio.
For what we are about to hear, may the Lord make us truly thankful.
Horizon Radio 102.5 FM, the station that Londoners love the most.
This is Skyline Radio, community radio for South East London.
Good morning, you're listening to LGR, London Greek Radio.
You're tuned to ED on Rebel Radio 93.9.
This is South Manchester's radio.
Twenty years after Radio Caroline dropped anchor off the East Coast, the pirates have swarmed ashore. Whether they're fully-fledged 24-hour music stations or backroom ego-trippers as fleeting and elusive as UFOs, they now total up to 100, and the figure is growing. The pace-setters like Skyline and Horizon are being joined on the dial by more obscure species, from Radio Earwig to Radio Terrapin, from Alice's Restaurant to Xanadu and Zodiac. Why do they do it? How do they get away with it? Why do they matter? And what do they tell us about listeners' demands and the regulations that control the airwaves?
This must be the place. Well, it's this side back the gate.
The first thing you're aware of when you visit a pirate radio station is that however many of them there are, they don't believe there's much safety in numbers. The next caller could always be the dreaded British Telecom Radio Interference Service.
Hello?
Yes?
Hello, it's Stuart Simon from the BBC.
Hi.
You Tommy?
Yes.
How are you?
Fine. Coming.
Thanks. Hello.
This is where it's happening.
Right. This is your studio. Where are the transmitters?
Well, that's the actual transmitter there. This
that
is the
thing? That's just the size of a handbag.
Well, that's 100 watts. And this thing here is the amplifier, which boosts it up to a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, that's a fan to keep it all cool.
Yes, it gets very hot.
And you're on the air at the moment, are you?
Yes.
Here we go.
Η ώρα είναι 6.59 λεπτά. Ακούτε τη Φωρή των Αποδήμων στα 93 FM. Φίλοι μου και πάλι μαζί σας για να σας διασκεδάσω μέχρι τις 10.
Voice of the Immigrants is one of at least three Greek stations in London, a sign that illegal broadcasting today caters for far more specialised audiences than in the simple old days of non-stop pop.
We're teaching the history of Cyprus, the history of Greece. We do children's programmes every day between 5:30 and 6:00. We do live church services every Sunday morning. We're there to entertain them, to teach them. They can learn a great deal about their ethnic identities, their traditions, their culture. We're not a pirate station. We're an unlicensed radio broadcasting station serving the Greek-speaking community. Pirate stations or pirates steal things. We don't steal anything from anybody.
Three Turkish stations run by rival brothers, one Arabic, a Rastafarian reggae setup called the Dread Broadcasting Corporation, a whisker away from Radio 4 on the dial, all claim to be providing unique services to minority groups in the London area. But like the other 16 or so metropolitan pirates, they're doing it on unauthorised frequencies, risking, say the authorities, interference of licensed broadcasts and emergency services. They're not subject to controls on programming and technical standards. They pay wages below union rates, if they pay at all, and they escape the copyright fees due to record companies and levies which legitimate commercial stations have to pay to the IBA. On top of it all, they're siphoning off advertising revenue and, in many cases, rebroadcasting news bulletins. That's the case for the prosecution. But however justified, it makes little impact on listeners to whom a friendly, apparently well-intentioned neighbourhood station can sound anything but criminal.
A record which reached number three back in November 1969, one of the 2 years we're looking at tonight in the Double Gold Hour. That's Blooming and Melting Pot. It's 15 minutes after 11, and I'd like to tell you now about a young man...
Diametrically across London, and a good deal further away in style from the voice of the immigrants, is the slick sound of Radio Jackie, a pirate with a 15-year record. in their shop in the middle of Morden, sandwiched between the Prudential Assurance and the Krusty Loaf Bakers, they sell T-shirts and second-hand records and invite callers to sign a petition to the Home Office appealing for a licence. It bases its appeal on innocence on nearly all the standard charges. It runs its own news service. It's never been accused of interference. It carries only high street advertisers who couldn't afford licensed commercial radio's rates. A combination of round-the-clock music and information has, Radio Jackie claims, brought it a solid and loyal audience of all ages and a reputation that justifies the jingles.
Radio Jackie, Southwest London, close enough to care.
The Double Gold Hour with Les Adams on Radio Jackie.
Do you listen to Radio Jackie?
Yeah.
What do you like about it?
It's good music.
It's friendlier because it's round here. You know sort of all the places they're talking about.
Why do you listen to Radio Jackie?
Because it's got good music. It plays a lot of jazz, funk and soul, and on Sundays in the afternoon it has a lot of old records, which is good for old people.
I think it's a good programme. There's good advertising on there, you know, local.
You know it's illegal though.
Yes, I know it's illegal, but it shouldn't be done away with.
There's got to be laws though, there's got to be rules, haven't
there? That's true, yes, but laws are meant to be broken, aren't they?
What do you get from it that you don't get, say, from Capital or Radio 1 or any of the other stations you could pick up?
We get information locally. This is what we require.
And you'd miss it if it went off the air?
We certainly would.
Radio Jackie also has the more telling support, at least of the moral kind, from a less expected source. On the day we visited their shop, we found ourselves in the company of Angela Rumbold, the Tory MP for Mitcham and Morden.
I've come to Radio Jackie today, and indeed I've been before, because I have had a very large number of letters from constituents, not just young constituents, but many elderly constituents, who enjoy what Radio Jackie is doing and who wish to see it continue.
The problem is, though, it's illegal.
The problem indeed is that it's illegal, and I also have taken that matter up with the Home Office to see if there's anything that can be done to help Radio Jackie become legal. Now, obviously, as a Member of Parliament, I can't openly and or indeed subversely back anything that's illegal, but I do think it's very strange that an organisation that's tried to become legal is then accused of being an illegal organisation. They are perfectly prepared to operate within the law, and they're perfectly prepared to operate with fair competition. If they lose, they acknowledge that the other people are better. But a free market is about people winning in competition, not asking the law to protect them so that they can win. That's different altogether.
The Home Office, Angela Rumbold says, isn't keen on what she's doing. Presumably, they wouldn't be very happy either about the correspondence that station manager Tony Collis has plastered over the walls from authors who include MPs from other neighbouring constituencies.
The letters are from the MPs, the listeners and the advertisers. We have one advertiser here, Zoe Gasses, that has increased his sales due to advertising on the station so much that he's had to take on extra staff. So we've helped job opportunities in the area.
What about these others? One from the Royal School for the Blind Development Appeal.
Yes, well, we help many local charities. We've raised money for the Royal Marsden Hospital, the Linden Lodge School for the Blind, Epsom Kidney Fund, and numerous other small charities which would otherwise not have had any help.
Let's not be seduced into thinking that the pirates are somehow wonderful, free-thinking, free-booting, marvellous people who've got the benefit of society in mind. What they're doing is cheating.
To independent local radio managers, hard-pressed by recession and falling audiences, a rash of pirates is at the very least an unwelcome irritant. To Colin Walters of Manchester's Piccadilly Radio, their appearance for the first time on his doorstep has made him more than ever aware of the conditions imposed on ILR by the Broadcasting Act under which it was set up.
Very clear-cut procedures and standards have been laid down by Parliament, and by and large, I think, until it's changed by Parliament, we ought to stick to those rules. Those rules imply that Piccadilly Radio, for my part, in Manchester, we have to pay, as near as damn it, £1 million a year for the privilege of being in existence. What the pirates are doing, let's make no bones about it, is cheating, getting on the cheap, deliberately sticking two fingers up to Parliament that has decided that certain standards should prevail in certain levels of broadcasting.
We've tried very hard to not avoid paying. We've tried writing on numerous occasions to the mechanical copyright bodies and the other performing rights bodies. We have, in fact, sent a cheque, as you can see on our notice board now, to the mechanical copyright people, which they have returned.
Well, they have to do that, don't they, because you're not a legal station.
Well, the fact people take our money, the tax people take our money, we pay national insurance contributions, they take our money, so why shouldn't the mechanical copyright people take our money?
But if you had to compete on equal terms with the ILR stations, you'd be out of business tomorrow morning, wouldn't you?
I don't think so at all. And
well, could you afford £1 million a year, for example, in fees of one kind or another and levies?
Well, radio just does not cost this sort of money. People have...
It does at the moment, for the ILR stations.
It does because of the IBA, and the IBA are a millstone around the ILR stations' necks, as Brian West, who represents the contractors to the IBA, has pointed out. The rules and the amount of money that the IBA extract from these stations is crippling.
The AIRC is the Association of Independent Radio Contractors, and Brian West, its director, last week went public with complaints that he and his members have so far been voicing only in private to their regulatory body, the IBA. No one, says Brian West, is arguing for complete deregulation in such things as advertising, editorial and programme standards. But if the pirates have done one thing, it's to illustrate the need for relaxation, he says. Should the companies be paying as much as £3.5 million jointly a year rental for their transmitters to the authority? Should Needle Time, the copyright paid to record companies, be so high? Should there be such tight control on how and where commercial stations raise finance? Couldn't they be allowed more say in gearing programme policy to commercial requirements?
They have now had 10 years operating under this tightly regulated system, and I think that if the rest of the media world had not moved on, producing pirates and cable and all the other distractions, the great boom in video, if everything had stood still, which of course it never does in this world, then the ILR contractors would have probably been soldiering along saying, well, it is a bit of a tight system, but we joined and we're happy with it. What they're saying is, look, the world has changed, and it's changed so rapidly that really the bones of the system, the basis on which we operate, has got to be looked at.
Some of them seemed almost to be saying, we wish we could go pirate.
Well, I think, yes, from time to time, when you're a frustrated ILR managing director and you're trying to balance revenue against the costs, which you can't seem to get the costs down and get the books in the black, it must seem very appealing when they see the undoubted advantages that the illegal broadcaster operates under. He doesn't pay any copyright fees, he doesn't pay any IBA rental, in a lot of instances he doesn't pay his staff. This, in his darker moments, must appeal enormously to the man running an ILR station. It gives rise to these thoughts because they see this as very unfair competition. And that really is the underlying motive in talking about deregulation or relaxation of the bonds that are on ILR at the moment, is saying, well, all we want to do is compete reasonably fairly with anyone else who comes along, but let's have the same set of rules for everyone.
The extent of these worries came to the fore at last week's radio festival in Manchester, attended by some 250 representatives from the BBC, ILR and other interested parties. One seminar in particular, chaired by Brian West, left no doubt about the concern about illegal broadcasting, particularly among the commercial operators.
The title of this session in the original programme is a somewhat flippant one, Let's Go Pirate, with the subtitle The Cost of Being Legitimate and Government Attitudes to Radio Piracy. First of all, the cost of being in the system, in the legitimate system.
For a time, the session followed an orderly and fairly predictable pattern of moan swapping. Then came the unexpected.
Charles Turner, KFM Radio in Stockport. I think the whole essence of it is...
Pirates. We're delighted to see you, because it didn't appear from the list that we had anybody from, let's put it this way, outside the system.
I mean, the whole point is that the present broadcasting industry is still trying to decide what the listener wants. Now, the whole situation should be deregulated.
KFM is to the Manchester area roughly what Jackie is to southwest London. From an office block 150 yards from Stockport Police Station, they broadcast a non-stop repertoire of what they call alternative music. It comes from two aging but stalwart ex-BBC turntables, housed in a stuffy, cluttered studio with bits of old carpet on the wall to dampen the sound, and a home-built control desk. But the VHF stereo signal is loud and clear, for most purposes as good as Piccadilly's, and it's been uninterrupted since KFM was last raided 5 months ago. Like Radio Jackie, KFM pulls in a wide range of small-scale high street advertising. Its rates are about 1/40th of Piccadilly's, and its directors, Charles Turner and Simon Richards, also go in for a good deal of promotion for the aims and claimed achievements of the station itself.
In 5 months of broadcasting, KFM Radio has received hundreds of tapes from local bands and musicians. We give them a chance for their music to be heard on air. No other radio station in Manchester offers this. Why not? Basically because all broadcasting in Britain is controlled by two bureaucratic bodies in London, the BBC and the IBA. The IBA charge enormous rentals to stations such as Piccadilly and closely control their programming output. The present government says it stands for free enterprise, small businesses and free competition. Please write to your MP or Douglas Hurd MP, the House of Commons, London SW1, demanding the introduction of truly independent local radio, whose programming output is determined by you, the listener.
We could call ourselves a community of interest station. The type of music we play features a lot of new releases. We also feature a lot of local bands actually in the programming, and also album tracks.
One of the best examples at the moment is a band called Colour Code, who are our local band, and they spent a great deal of money producing their own 12-inch single and then found they couldn't get it played anywhere. KFM played it heavily and backed them, and since we've been backing them, suddenly they're played on the local ILR station. They have interest from record companies, things that they would never have achieved if we hadn't have existed.
We're just identifying one particular need and fulfilling it. If there was another 9 stations in Manchester, you'd almost certainly have someone trying to do all news, someone doing heavy rock, and so on. I see no reason why someone shouldn't say, right, I've got a load of money, I'm into country and western music, I want to do a country and western station. If the thing falls flat on its face, he loses out, doesn't he? It doesn't cost the government or the taxpayer anything.
KFM had blunt answers to most of their questioners at the festival session. Would they accept a franchise under IBA rules? No way, they said. The IBA was totally irrelevant. But they reckoned they could afford copyright payments and had offered to make them, just like Jackie. General scepticism on that. Would they undercut union rates? If that was what it took to run a station, yes. The words Eddie Shah sprang to more than one pair of lips. But it was the radio critic and broadcaster Gillian Reynolds who pointed to another reason for licensed broadcasters' frustration over their unwelcome competitors.
How come you're sitting here in this room? Why aren't the police at the door hooking you up? I'm asking that hypothetically, because if you were a National Front station, if you were a Support the Miners radio station, if you were a pro-IRA station, the police would be at the door hooking you off now.
OK, folks, don't forget the revolution starts right here with Sheffield Peace Radio on 103.5. These are the Beatles singing about just that.
The suspicion widely harboured in radio circles that not all pirates are pursued with the same vigour is not dispelled by Guy's account of how the overtly political station Sheffield Peace was taken off the air. Peace, they say, is a generic term. They apply it loosely to all their campaigns, from animal rights to supporting the miners' strike. And as they wait for a summons and plan their next foray into the ether, they see that as the reason for the special attention they claim to have received when they were visited by the Radio Interference Service last April.
We were sought out because we were a political station, and there was absolutely no doubt about this. What happened was a concerted attempt by a large number of people. There were 8 Department of Trade officials from all over the northeast coming and looking for us. And they'd been looking for us from the word go, and they were obviously attempting to catch not only our equipment, but us. In fact, what they did on the day in which they caught us was they followed us from our homes.
Seems sensible from their point of view. You were, after all, breaking the law.
Well, it does, but I mean, other people who break the law in this way don't have that sort of treatment. There are a lot of radio stations, pirate radio stations, that broadcast just music. Some of them really are no more than pale imitations of Capital Radio, and they don't have this sort of treatment. And they, in fact, told us that the reason why they were looking for us was because they had a directive from the Department of Trade in London to come and look for us, and that because we called ourselves Sheffield Peace Radio, that meant that we were, you know, to be taken out, as it were.
Can you remember the exact words which gave you that impression?
Well, we asked him how it was that he'd been told to come and look out for us this time, and his exact words were, "It was a directive from the Department of Trade in London. You made a mistake calling yourself Sheffield Peace Radio. They don't like that."
The Department of Trade and Industry, who are responsible for enforcing the Wireless Telegraphy Act, deny that any special instructions were given. In fact, I was told there's no record in London of the raid in question taking place. But we've certainly met operators who believe they have an understanding that they'll be left alone as long as they aren't too much of a nuisance. Sometimes the RIS knock at the door, one of them told me, and we say, "Oh no, not again, give us a break," and we go and have a chat in the pub. If they came in, they'd have to bust us. Again, this is vigorously denied by the Department of Trade. What can't be denied is what actually happened when Tommy, of the Greek station Voice of the Immigrants, was actually taken to court.
I was charged under 6 offences. My partner was charged with 1 offence for operating the equipment. He was fined £30 and I was fined £50 per offence. This was after 2 hours of giving mitigating circumstances. We produced documents to the magistrates proving that our ideas of a community station were not illegal. You know, they were purely just unlicensed. They were not out to do any harm to any other station or to any other individual. And I think they understood, obviously, otherwise they would have given more heavy fines.
They could have fined you up to £1,000 per offence, couldn't they?
Well, yes, the first time we got caught, the law was, it did state up to £1,000, but then by May the 5th, it became £2,000. So the 4 of the offences that I had a limit of £1,000, and the other 2 offences had a limit of £2,000.
But as we can hear, you're back on the air again. How long did it take you to get back?
Well, it's a matter of courtesy. We switched off on the day we went to court. We came back the next day.
The next day?
Yes.
But hadn't they confiscated your equipment?
Yes, they confiscated the equipment. They took the transmitter away, the turntables, the tape deck, microphones. Yes, but we're determined, you know,
But how could you start transmitting again if they took all your equipment away?
Well, we have backup equipment in store. We have transmitters and various equipment still in hiding, so if they should take something, we replace it.
Court decisions, of course, aren't in the hands of government departments. Getting the evidence is, but with only 330 staff, some part-time and none working full-time on illegal broadcasting, the RIS is hard-pressed. Also, not all pirates are cooperative enough to write to them and tell them where they are, and then turn up in court and plead guilty, as Tommy did. There can even be violence when they track down their prey. Things should change when the last of a number of extra powers are given to the enforcers by the new Telecommunications Act next week. But the knowledge that this was to happen didn't stop the IBA chairman writing to the Home Office, which has the responsibility for broadcasting policy, last March, demanding tougher action. The BBC has been making similar representations. The managing directors of radio of the 2 organisations, John Thompson of the IBA and Richard Francis of the BBC, have a common view on what's happened so far.
The authority as such is really takes the view that the pirates are a pain, and in terms of the arrangements for frequencies and so on and so on, it's very much hoped at the authority, and I think this is also the BBC's view, that the government with the new legislation will find the resources actually to apply the new law.
Which implies that it hasn't so far.
There's been a development, there's been a growth in activity. But I think that, as you will know from the way in which the IBA has made its position public over recent months, we have felt that there was a need for acceleration in the action that was being taken.
We feel that the Radio Interference Service, particularly with the greater powers which are about to become available to it, should be able to do more under those powers to apprehend the pirates.
There is obviously quite a widespread feeling that they weren't using the powers they had before.
Well, I must say the results have been extremely disappointing in that the pirates have actually been springing up faster than they've been put down. And insofar as it's the listener who suffers, this seems to me to be a public service which may have been lacking in resources, but also may have been lacking in a certain impetus to get at the problem.
The new powers include transferring the radio interference service from British Telecom to the DTI, doubling the maximum fine and prison sentence to £2,000 and 6 months, making it illegal to offer certain equipment for sale, and giving the interference service powers to seize equipment for use as evidence. Before, they faced the catch-22 of having to get a conviction before they could touch it. As to what difference the new powers will make in practice, Brian West of the Association of Independent Radio Contractors prefers to reserve judgment.
It doesn't matter how swingeing you make the sentences if you don't make the arrests. And what we have said, my association has said to the Home Secretary, look, it's not enough to say we will soon have these increased powers. You have got to increase the resources. But then underlying that is this question has emerged in the debate or in my opening remarks, and that is one questions whether there is the will to deal with the problem. And I have a sneaking feeling that in governmental circles they may see its solution come in a different way, and that is by creating some other tier of broadcasting, which hopefully in their eyes will mop up the pirates. There is a feeling abroad, and it's shared by a lot of my colleagues in the independent sector, that the Home Office and the DTI are not exactly the best of friends over broadcasting matters now. I mean, I've noticed it in meetings that Home Office personnel have openly criticised DTI personnel over the question of regulation. So
they're not doing enough.
Saying that they're not doing enough and they're not doing it very well and they're not using the resources they've got in the best possible way. There was also the feeling aboard amongst broadcasters that, in fact, the Department of Trade and Industry is harbouring the thought that it will be somewhat easier to legalise the pirates than to clamp down on them.
The Minister of State at the Home Office with responsibility for broadcasting policy is Douglas Hurd. He now faces two growing piles of mail from pirates and their supporters seeking licences and from their opponents who want them finally taken off the air. And, says Mr. Hurd, there's no question of which way the government is moving. Creeping legalisation is out.
You will see certainly a more energetic government effort to crack down on them. Actually, the number of prosecutions and convictions has risen, rose last year compared with the year before. So it's not true to say that we've been idle. But I think you can expect to see in the future even more effective action.
You see, I can hear a certain amount of hollow laughter at that among the legitimate broadcasting circles who would say that you haven't been using the powers that already exist.
Well, of course they say that. Of course they're urging us on. I don't complain about that. But they'd better just see what happens.
Are you more worried about stations setting up to disseminate some kind of political message, perhaps of a left-wing nature, than about pop stations?
Or of a right-wing nature. I mean, I would hate to see a National Front radio broadcasting in London, just as I'd hate to see a communist. But this is one of the standards which are secured by Parliament. Political balance, political objectivity. I mean, we all complain and kick from time to time the way the BBC or the ITV companies do particular things. But there are certain rules which are operative. But the pirates are not subject to those at all, and that's one of the complaints.
There have been suggestions, though, that you've been much more vigorous in your pursuit of political stations than of ones playing music.
I don't think that is so. No, our objection is to pirate radios as a concept.
So if a station set up tomorrow taking sides on the miners' dispute, for example, it wouldn't worry you any more than Radio Jackie playing pop music?
It would worry me because it would be illegal.
But they're both illegal.
They're both illegal, and so both worry me.
Equally?
Certainly. Illegality is illegality.
But in the case of one station, we've talked to one illegal station. They were prosecuted. They
as they said, turned off their transmitter as a matter of courtesy on the day they went to court, and they were back on the air again straight away. Doesn't the law look a bit of an ass?
Yes, it certainly does, and that's one reason why one doesn't leap in without being sure that one has the powers to make the prosecution effective. It's precisely because of those kind of cases that, A, we needed more effective powers, and B, we need to consider rather carefully how those powers are used.
Is there a problem, then, of obtaining evidence?
Yes, of course there's a problem of obtaining evidence. This is one of the difficulties.
A lot of people are going to find it awfully difficult to understand how it is that a pirate radio, which makes no secret of its existence, even tells the authorities where it is and what it's doing, can stay on the air unmolested for a whole year after setting up.
Well, quite a lot don't. Quite a lot are successfully prosecuted. Quite a lot have gone off the air. Radio Sovereign recently in the Twickenham area. And that will continue, and as our resources and as our powers increase over this, it will increasingly happen.
You don't accept that there is a lack of political will?
No, there isn't a lack of political will. There has been a shortage of resources, and there's been a shortage of evidence. But there's not a lack of political will, because the political point is perfectly clear, that Parliament having established a regime, it is up to the government to see that it works.
Licensed broadcasters aren't the only ones who want government action in deed as well as word. The Community Radio Association was formed in May of last year to campaign for a third force outside the BBC-IBA duopoly, which might include some, though by no means all, of the activities currently engaged in by pirates. When we met him at the radio festival, Simon Partridge, the director of the association, was as worried as many of the broadcasters about the new wave of pirates. But he warns strong-arm tactics alone won't solve the problem.
The fact is, I think it will be an invitation to more piracy simply to crack down without, in actual fact, looking very seriously and deeply at some alternatives. We will actually have to use some imagination in devising a new institutional structure for local broadcasting, and whether it's going to be partly a completely autonomous third sector, whether there can be associate stations with ILR, I don't think we know. There's a number of options which we could explore at the moment. You're going to have some sort of policeman. And the question is then, who is going to be allowed to fit into these spaces, and they are only spaces, and who is not going to be allowed to fit in? There's got to be some sort of filtering mechanism. There simply is not room for everybody who wants to broadcast, and that is a kind of perennial problem which needs some sort of institutional solution.
There could be a bit more room after the international conference in Geneva next December, which will allocate further frequencies on VHF band 2, the one we use now. But if the pirates are on the way out, the question is, what happens to the audience or audiences which they claim to have established? By the very nature of piracy, figures for these are hard to get at. BBC audience research suggests that for all the support expressed for Radio Jackie, for example, 89% of listeners in their area listen to BBC and ILR stations in any given week. What does seem certain, as Douglas Hurd agrees, is that whether it's pirate style or not, community as opposed to local radio does have an appeal.
There is quite a demand now for what is called community radio, but that phrase covers a whole range of rather different ideas. There's a conference, as you know, in Geneva towards the end of this year, which we hope will produce a little more flexibility here, give a little more space. After that, it will be possible for us to look at whether, and if so, how, we could begin to accommodate some kind of community radio. And I think there will be a debate and discussion about this, which will probably start during next year, and may, but I underline may lead to finding a place over the coming years for community radio.
Are the pirates telling us something about the current fare available on the airwaves, do you think?
Well, obviously there's a great variety of demand. And some pirates, of course, aren't doing anything new at all. They're simply doing something on a smaller scale and hoping to get away with it without really contributing anything particularly new. But there are people who are not pirating, waiting for an opportunity to broadcast either to a particular group of people or in a particular way, on a particular subject or with a particular kind of music. And I hope that the legit broadcasters are aware of that and are doing their best to meet those demands when they find them.
General de Gaulle, the audience at the radio festival, was told, used to complain about the problems of running a country which had more cheeses than days in the year. President Mitterrand's problem, the speaker went on, is how to run a country with six times as many radio stations as cheeses. The story came from Patrick Vité-Philippe of the French cultural delegation in Manchester. When the French deregulated radio in 1982, there was, he explains, an explosion of mini-stations, particularly in the Paris area, where about 200 suddenly sprang up. Subsequent regulation, argues Mr. Vité-Philippe, has brought the numbers down to about 50 and the standards up, at least in comparison with the mayhem in Italy, where a so-called transmitter war is raging. Now, Paris is often held up by community radio enthusiasts as an example of what could happen in London. An example or a warning? A bit of both, according to Patrick Vité-Philippe.
You'll hear a lot of various ethnic music from all over the world. You'll hear a lot of British and American pop. You'll hear the Liverpool sound. You'll hear about everything which can be humanly composed and played. You'll hear also a lot of talk in various languages, in Arabic, in Caribbean Creole, in Italian. There was Fréquence Gay, which is a gay radio station, also immigré groups, some municipal radio, some non-municipal, some with a political bias, the art radio, community radio, also very small areas, radio within Paris, Radio d'Arrondissement, Radio Montmartre, and so on and so on. In fact, a great variety, a great diversity. It is a kind of bubbling, amazing creativity. The best rub shoulder with the worst. A lot of chatter, a lot of meaningless gossip and talk. But you can certainly hear a lot of very creative radio making.
So isn't it a problem for Parisians? Do they resent all this cluttering up of the airwaves or not?
I don't think they resent it, although I remember this, talking with some of my colleagues at Paris University, and one being very upset not being able to listen to Bach as comfortably as he could before. There was a lot of overlap of reggae music on his favourite station.
The French crash programme of community radio may well not appeal to everyone on this side of the channel. Imagine picking your way through about 15 stations on the VHF dial between Radio 3 and Radio 4, and you'll have a rough idea of what it would be like. In any case, there would be technical problems in such a scheme. Radio 1 is still to get its own VHF frequency, and the BBC and IBA's planned expansion programmes will, it said, need whatever is available on the existing band. But community radio isn't being ignored. A series of experimental access stations run from caravans in five towns in the Manchester area have suggested considerable demand for so-called drop-in radio. Further ahead, there's the possibility of finding a home for a kind of multi-channel neighbourhood radio network on the band to be vacated by 405-line television transmissions. One thing seems clear. The new rash of pirates has sparked off a debate. And to Brian West of the AIRC, their re-emergence is not something to be ignored.
I think this time round, the message from the pirates is they're telling us something about the way we regulate and run radio. I think they may have made a useful contribution if they persuade the government and the IBA and in fact the radio industry to look at the way it regulates itself. Undoubtedly, radio, the face of radio is going to change markedly in this country over the next 2, 3, 4 years, certainly by the end of this decade. There appears to be a demand for more localised local broadcasting. It can take a variety of forms. I don't think it will be denied. I don't think it will go away, just as the pirates haven't gone away. So we might as well face up to it and try and do it as effectively and satisfyingly as possible.
Reporter in this week's File on 4 was Stuart Simon, and the programme was produced in Manchester by Paul Campbell. There's a second chance to hear it at 4:02 tomorrow afternoon.